Shri Vrindavan Dhamma ki, Shri Mayapur Dhamma ki, Ganga Maya ki, Jamuna Maya ki, Bhakti Devi ki, Tulasi Devi ki, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki, Jainitai Gaura Prenavati. All glories to the Samadhojis, all glories to the Samadhojis, all glories to the Samadhojis. All glories to Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga, all glories to Shri Prabhupada.
Hare Krishna, everybody.
Hare Krishna.
Welcome to another Hare Jamming this week. We welcome you. Thank you for coming. So today we're very honored, very pleased to have a wonderful senior disciple of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada here with us today. Before I introduce our speaker, I'd just like to see if there's anybody here for the first time today. Who's come for the first time? I can see a few new faces.
No, I've come for the
first time. Right, perfect. Anybody else in the crowd? So, who's been here for the second time? Third time? Okay, so who's been here too many times to remember that they've just forgotten? Okay, that's good. That's what we'd like to see. So, today's topic, what we're going to be discussing about, what Maharaj is presenting to us, is the title, which, does anybody know what the title is? You saw it on the website or the email?
Culture.
Yeah, so culture is not only found in yogurt.
Culture.
Now, it's there's a debate whether what type of yogurt it is. Is it a sort of Marks and Spencer's brand yogurt? Or is it a Sainsbury's, or is it just plain Bhaktivedanta Manamade yogurt from the cows that, you know, we have? But that's not the issue. The issue is what Maharaj will give to us in his discussion today. Culture is not only found in yogurt. So just to introduce His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Purana Swami, before we do that, in our traditional Panasena style, we raise two hands in the air, as far as you can, just like you do care. And shout really loudly three times.
Hariyo! Hariyo! Hariyo!
His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Purana Swami Maharaj ki
jai!
So Maharaj is originally from America, and in the early 1970s, before most of us here were born, he got introduced to Srila Prabhupada's movement, ISKCON movement, International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And ever since then, he's been dedicating his life to serving the instructions of his Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada. And more specifically, he's been in Mayapur, which is in West Bengal in India, and he's in charge of the curriculum there for the Gurukul.
And did you ask how many here have ever heard of India?
Okay, I will ask. How many of you have heard of India, Maharaj? Okay. Who hasn't heard of India? There's a separate jamming for that afterwards. So the Maharaj is obviously is very, very senior disciple of Srila Prabhupada, very dedicated, and we are actually very, very honored. We thank him for coming to a Panasena program here today at Hare Jamming. We would obviously started a bit late because obviously the traffic and, you know, not many people. Obviously, there were a few bomb scares in London out here. Any of you who are working there, so. But anyway, we hope to finish the discussion by about 9:15, and then we'll have prasadam, which is the, no, sorry, everyone, sorry. Jumping the gun here. We have Aarti and Kirtan for about 45 minutes, and then we have prasadam at the end to finish by about 10:45. So what we would request, humbly request, is that all of you here, if you have any questions, then there is time in between or at the end, whichever Maharaj would like, to possibly to ask some questions for Maharaj, because being Panasena, being youthful, we expect everyone to have many, many questions about their life and how to live their life in the way that it's being taught to us. So I'm going to request everyone to, you know, have some questions ready. And if you're too shy to ask, then you can always write down a piece of paper and we can hand it forward to Maharaj to answer at the end. So once again, I'd like to thank everyone for coming. Also like to thank our speaker, and we'll continue with the program today. Hare Krishna.
So somebody from Australia once asked me what was the difference between yogurt and an Australian. Right. So the answer is the culture. So basically, you have the philosophy. Philosophy means what is the knowledge of that's given by Krishna. What actually is going on in the cosmic creation? Who's God? Who's us? What's the material world? What's the relationship? The culture is the natural lifestyle of those who follow that philosophy. Right? They're connected. Prabhupada said if you have philosophy without culture, or let's say without religion, then it'll be mental speculation. And if you have religion without philosophy, it will be sentiment. Right? So basically, for many of you, you know, here, you've grown up in the environment of, you've had experience of the sentiment aspect. You know, families that, you know, claim to go back in tradition to, you know, various Indian traditions. But if you ask a question about it, you'll get no answer. You know, other than, well, this is what my parents did, or that's what somebody else did, or it's nice, or it's good, or, you know, like that. But as far as, you know, something solid, then it's not. So you can already see what's the difficulty there. But in the inverse, it also goes, as we have the philosophy, if there's not the culture, then our lifestyle won't match our philosophy, and then we'll feel bad about that also. So there must be some connection. So basically, culture would be someone who has a value system that's based on higher principles, and that they're willing to live according to those principles, despite, you know, what others may or may not think about that. So it's based on sacrifice. Culture means that sacrifice means that the voluntarily giving up something for someone else. Right? That's sacrifice. So that applies anywhere and everywhere. It's not just, you know, sitting behind a fire and pouring ghee into it, that's called sacrifice. No. Anything that you do in relationship with others then is sacrifice, if you're considering the relationship. Problem with the modern culture, it's I did it my way, right? Is what I like to do, that's what I do, I am who I am, I do what I want to do. But actually, if you think about it, you don't. You know what I'm saying? If I look around, basically you're all dressed in the same way, same hairstyle, same different things. So, like it or not, you're not doing it your way. You're making a choice within what's there. Like you go to a restaurant, you go to an Italian restaurant, you can't say, well, I want Mexican. And then if they say, well, we don't have, it says, well, that's what I want. Hey, I'm the center here, I'm the important one. No. You make a choice of what's on the menu. Right? And so because you chose this and someone else chose that, then you say, yes, I'm independent, I'm doing what I want. But that's as far as it goes. So never kid yourself that you're doing something very different, independent, you're special, you're different from anybody else. Every generation thinks that, and they've been thinking that for thousands of years. Right? The youth of today, how they think and act, is no different than they acted before. Just they use different words. Music may be a little different, clothes a little different, mentality is exactly the same. So, therefore, the idea is do something that will last, right? Why do something now and not have it last? What's the use? You put in so much time, effort, energy in being who you think you are, but if it's not going to last, what's the purpose? What's the benefit? Right? Does that make sense? But, you know, if you went to a shop and you saw some nice outfit, you said, well, that's great. And then they told you, yes, it'll last for 10 minutes. You put it on, it'll look great for 10 minutes. and it'll just kind of fade away. Would you buy it? No. So why would you buy something that you're going to invest so much time, your whole youth, your whole energy in, and then have it disappear later? What's the use? I remember once going, well, I did go back, visit America, the West Coast, and I went into this one, I had to go to, you know, some lawyer's office on the 30th floor of some building there. And I went in with, you know, my wooden shoes. And so the lady behind the desk, you know, dressed accordingly how someone sitting behind the desk in a lawyer's office on the 30th floor somewhere in Los Angeles should be dressed. Then she commented on the shoes. They said, oh, where do you get those? I said, India. And then she went on the whole thing. She was one of these wild hippies. She was at Woodstock. You know, she had done all the things, but then reality hit. You got to make money to pay the bills, and you got a family. And there she is, sitting behind, you know, there she is on Wall Street, right? So that's the whole point, is say what you like now, but the reality is you grow up. So then the choice is do you want to mature in something you've already established, or do you want to have your vision destroyed, and then you just become another brick in the wall? That's your choice. So that means culture is something that is cultivated, right? That means culture, something that has been cultivated, right? So, you know, you find it in yogurt, you know, you may find it in a petri dish somewhere. But the point is it's what you cultivate. So you're cultivating something now. You're cultivating a mentality, an attitude, but how long can it last? Right? Can the attitude that you're doing now, will it survive crow's feet? Right? And I don't know, maybe that's what we used to call them, those nice, cute little lines that come at the corner of your eyes, you know, right when you're about 27, 28, 29, definitely 30, you know, when you go over the, fall off the other side of the edge of the universe there. Right, you know, you become prehistoric, fossilized, you know, all those things. You know. So, are you following a lifestyle that will last? Otherwise, do you want to redefine yourself every 10 years? You know, so you spend your whole time finding yourself, and then when you finally find yourself, then it doesn't work anymore? Does that make sense? Like that. It means we're saying all these things not to insult anyone. We're saying these things to create thought, right? Thinking like that. So, you know, we hope nobody gets offended. And, yeah. So, yeah. And the reason we can say some of this stuff was back somewhere between the Jurassic and the Paleolithic age, then we were also, you know, in this same state that you are in now, like that. Like that. So, the idea is that you have a value system, you have a philosophy, and your value system is consistent. And then you work within that to, how do you say? Develop your identity, right? That's independent. Independent means you dress the way you want to dress because that's the way you want to dress. It doesn't matter if everybody else dresses that way. Whether it's in fashion, not in fashion, you're dressing the way you like to dress. Does that make sense? Right? Because otherwise, if it's generated from fashion, how can you claim that you're independent, that you're free? Right? I mean, that's what you tell the parents, right? No, I want to do what I want to do. I'm free. Why should I be bound? But all it means is we're saying, I'm not bound by how my parents say I should behave. I'm bound by how everybody else around me, my peer group, says. Right? Guaranteed that if you come out wearing an outfit that others in your peer group say is stupid, I guarantee you, it changes within nanoseconds. Right? So this is the point. If we're saying I'm independent, I'm free, I do it as I like, but actually, are we? Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So, that's the meaning of culture. Culture means something that matches what you say you are. What you claim as your identity, you have a lifestyle that matches that. Does that make sense? So now, naturally they'll come up, the element is, okay, let us say we want to do whatever we want to do. And in this case, since we're Pandavasena, then, you know, there would naturally be some Krishna conscious element. But it's so hard, everybody else around us is not, and we have to fit in, otherwise they bother us, this and that. But if you think about it, fit in with what? You know, you look at, you say you're going to school. There's a lot of people that are getting straight A's that we would give terminologies like, or at least in America you'd say, call them geeks or nerds. There's another really good one. Geeks, nerds, and dweebs, yes, dweebs. And they're getting great marks. And they're not dressed in any way we are, moving in the circles that we are. How are they surviving according to our philosophy that we have to fit in? While driving here, I saw a bunch of, I guess they're Turks, I'm not sure, head to foot covered, right in the middle of London. Not only that, they were teenagers. How does that happen? Right? I've heard that 40% of the population in Britain is vegetarian. So there's no problem with that. It's a growing thing. Right? There's even a lot of people who dabble in Buddhism and other Eastern philosophies, and it's considered normal. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, our lifestyle is actually on the cutting edge of what everybody else is, the direction everybody else is moving. So now you can either move with it as they do or lead it. That's all. Right? Means generally they say you have three choices. Lead, follow, or get out of the way. Right? So Krishna consciousness is meant to lead. Right? Or at least if we're not leading, we follow those who are leading. Right? Then it works. Is this okay? You know, this is how you say. This is not too much attitude. You know, I mean, because we're trying to be nice. If I was in New York, it'd be about three times worse. But like that. So, because it's in England, then a little bit more concept of culture, right? You know, yogurt's new to America. You know, it showed up about the 60s, I think, maybe the 50s. Some strange thing from, I think, Sweden. I think they're the ones that are accredited with yogurt, like that. Like that. It's Swiss? I mean Swedish? Yeah? Yogurt is the Swedish word, so we got it from there. I mean, it does grow in India and everywhere else in the world, but somehow or another they're accredited with it, I guess, because they're Europeans, so definitely only want to get it from Europe. You wouldn't want to get any of that Middle Eastern, you know. Yogurt might get a bad stomach, right? So now, basically, it comes down to the personal commitment of how much you're willing to follow your own values, you know, in spite of what anybody else is going to say. Right? Just to set something off, means this is kind of, this would be more probably an answer to a question later, but just because, make sure it's been said. Think about this. Now, you go to a shop and you see posters, right, or advertisements, and there's somebody wearing some fashion outfit, right? And they look good, they look attractive, right? Then people who are, and it starts in the top, right? New fashion starts at the top of the, you know, fashion chain, right? Then it starts to work down. So when then you see wealthy people, more, you know, your, I don't know what you would call it, but you know, your more fashionable persons wearing it, it still looks good. And finally, when it gets down to, you know, when you're buying it in wherever it is, in Kmart or whatever it is here, then it's the same thing, same color, same cut, but by this time you see people wearing it on the suite, it does not look good. The fashion changes. But it's the same outfit. So what has changed? What has caused the fashion to change? Right? Think about it. Why do they pay a model, you know, $1,000 a shoot? Right? 2 hours, 2.5 hours, stand in front of the camera and, you know, keep moving and this and all that kind of stuff. Right? It's because they look confident in it. They look good in it. And if you've ever watched a fashion show where it's the origin of it, means where the fashion house itself has models walking down the runway, and then all the other wholesalers and retailers of the world are sitting there taking notes and ordering what they're going to order. If you look at it, how much of that is actually even like kind of like normal? It's sometimes the weirdest possible things you could imagine. But do they come out, do they look embarrassed? No, they look very, very confident. So that's the point that we're trying to make, is whatever you wear, if you wear it with confidence, other people are attracted. Because that's the point. In this material world, people are insecure. And they're looking for something that will give them security, will give them an identity that they can say, yes, this is me, this is okay, I'm okay, I fit in, no one's going to bother me. Right? So the point is if whatever you're wearing, if you wear it with confidence, everybody else will be looking at you and wondering where you got the clothes. Instead of you looking at everybody else and thinking, well, maybe if I bought that, I might feel more secure. Or if I bought this, oh, I might feel secure. Think about it. Right? Does that make sense? That's the whole point. So, you know, that's in, you know, in anticipation of the point, well, you know, we have to dress according to it. But tell me, what is the norm? What is the norm? You see people wearing very formal attire, you see people wearing dress casual, you know, you see people wearing very kind of like, you know, relaxed things, you see people wearing pretty wild stuff. So what's normal? Right? For some punks, unless you have at least 25 piercings, then it's not normal. Right? In India, the Nagas, if you don't have 12 years of hair dragging on the ground, you know, you're small time. So how do you define what's normal? This is actually where your philosophy will break down. Because what you're doing is, what I can relate to of what's out there, and I could possibly find an identity with, that's what I'm doing. Right? Does that make sense? It's not that you've decided, this is what I wear. And I couldn't care less if anybody else likes it or not. Does that make sense? So the point is if you have attitude, it should be consistent. Right? Otherwise, it's easy to have attitude with your parents, but let us see you do the same attitude with your friends. Then we'll see who's tough. Any questions? Yes. How do you define what's normal? You didn't quite catch it. Means, let's say you go down to, around London, you drive around, you'll see people in three-piece suits. You'll see people in, dress casuals. I don't know, maybe you don't use these terms here. These are probably American. Means, you use that. Okay. You'll see people dressed in just kind of average, it's like okay stuff, like that. Nothing fancy, nothing weird. Then you get stuff where you start to get wild. You put together pieces, this and that. You kind of look a bit gypsyish, or a little bit more wild, or something. Or, the dog got a hold of your pants before you put them on, or something like that. Or, the washing machine went a little nuts, and your mother put too much bleach, or something like that. And then into complete bizarre, right? Depending where you go to the financial district, you'll see one thing. You go down at the, artist end of town where all the dramas and, the live shows are, with a lot of artists, and you see some wild stuff there. So what's normal? You know what I'm saying? Normal depends upon what group you're in, right? And you guys here are a group. So that means technically you only have to please whoever's in this room. Right? That means you guys could dress how you would like to dress that would fit in here. But if we ask, there's a good chance that each one of you will say, I have to dress like this because I got to fit in. If you got a big enough group here, you could fit in with yourself. Don't have to worry about what anybody else thinks. Does that make sense? Like that. School, but who's at school? Like I mentioned before, there's nerds at school that are getting straight A's, who what they wear is completely off the map as far as fashion goes. Right? They do well with their teachers, they do well with this and that. They probably end up in the future being the one that runs your life because they're in a position where they run this country. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, does that make sense? This means I'm going to talk very general here. If you want me to get specific, we can. But problem is, we're always worried about false egos. So.
From what I understand, you're saying when we come here, we wear what we wear to fit into here. But the same way, we wear what we wear to fit into our friends' circle at school.
But you choose who your friends are. If you want to be the ones that that are hi. I remember, now that I've met some people, I remember that there was a group of girls like that in our high school. We had a monster high school. When they built the thing, the people who were doing the construction used to wear roller skates. It was so big to get from one end to the other. I'm not joking. It was that big, like that. It would be, probably like from here to that tree over there and twice as big. It was just corridors. Because each classroom, there was courtyards. So each classroom, looked into the corridor, into the courtyard. Huge place. There were tons and tons of students. I remember there was a group of girls that's what they did. And every day when I'd leave the school, I'd walk by and they'd be over there trying to do their thing with the punky guys that, were interested. Like that. I went through school. No one bothered me. See, there's a misnomer that if you dress in a respectable way that others will harass you. Actually, the common girl, she's so exploited and she doesn't know what to do that all she can do basically is show off her body to try to get some acceptance. That if somebody with confidence has some values and keeps themselves dressed nicely and in a cultured way, they actually respect it. The girls that are really like prostitutes, they respect it. The girls that want to be like prostitutes, they'll make the comments. So if those people make the comments, who cares? Because they're the scum. The good girls won't make a comment. The bad girls will not make a comment. It's the ones in between who fancy themselves bad girls. They're scum. Why bother? So that means you're going to change your lifestyle for them, and how many of them are there? If you really go down, it's just like, let me take this. When I first started wearing glasses, before that I thought a couple of people wore glasses. When I started wearing glasses, you look around, you see there's a lot of people wearing glasses. I was shocked how many people wore glasses. Right? Yeah? Yeah, same thing. So if you actually look around, right now you probably think that there's a certain class of people that you have to fit into. But if you actually count, you'll find, you know, a few hands, you know, two hands and maybe a few friends' hands, and you got them all counted. Because that circle, how many can it have in it? How many, top, you know, competitive BITCHs can run the school? You know, this is why I wanted to keep it a little generic. Because I'm saying we can get very much into detail, but I don't know if you would appreciate.
They wouldn't mind.
Huh?
They don't mind. Maybe.
They don't mind. You sure?
Most of them are quite rough.
Rough.
Or they want to be rough.
Huh? They want to be rough, but being rough is another thing. You know what I'm saying? So, like that, you have a choice. Being so-called next, like in the fashion circuit, so there's only one fashion? There's not sophistication? You understand? Sophistication goes beyond. Something that you bought 10 years ago that's sophisticated, it's still good now. Something that you bought that's street culture in 6 months, it's out. And factually, if you're really on the cutting edge, in 1 week, it's out. So if you're still wearing the same thing after 1 week, you're not on top of the pile. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, why not take your money, invest it in something that has some meaning, and dress in such a way that's sophisticated, right? If you look at the movies, who's in the movies? The street sluts or the more sophisticated? How do they dress them? The top actresses and that, what do they look like? You ever seen them with 20, you know, piercings on the face or this or that? You ever seen them wear really, really street slutty stuff? That's sophisticated. So people pay to go watch them, right? So the whole point is, do you want to get through school or do you want some guys that are hooting at you and trying to pinch your backside? Why are you going to school? Your mother and father are paying thousands of pounds for you to get your butt pinched, right? You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is, this whole idea you got to fit in, you do to some degree. In other words, it has to be something, but who do you have to fit in to? Who gives you your marks at the end of the term? Right? Now, you have one class of girl that goes through the school, and at the end of the term, she's made it with X amount of boys, and then she's considered good. There's another one that at the end of the term says that she got a 4-point average. Right? So the point is if you just want to make it with boys, why spend all that money? You could spend all the money on education. You could have bought yourself a house, a car, and a lot of nice clothes and accessories for the same amount of money. You know? And not have to waste your time with the same guys day in and day out. You could be, you know, you could much broaden your, you know, prospects. So is that intelligent? Or do you go to school to get good marks so you can, you know, get a career? So do you need to dress like that to get a career? Who is the one that give you the marks? The kids in the school or the teachers? So this is what I'm talking about, reality. It means there is a reality you got to fit in, but you choose who you want to fit in with. They didn't come up to you and say, hey, you got to be part of our, you know, bitchy group here. Did they? No, you chose to be part of that. So that's the point. You choose. You have the freedom to do. But when you pick, you can't say, well, that's the only choice. There are other choices. Right? Like that. So that's my point, is that make your choice. You want to dress in that way, then okay. But then along with it comes all the nice shallowness that goes along with it, right? Okay, you go out there and the guy can see exactly what you look like. They can tell your bra size, they can tell how big your hips are, they can tell what your thighs are like, you know? So does that make you special? Every guy in the school knows. Does that make you special? Think about it. What's special is the one that they don't know. And what's more special is that the guy that you marry, he's the only one that does know. Otherwise, what's the meaning? You're a common piece of meat off the shelf. Everybody can go and look at it and stare at it through the glass window. You sure they can handle it? I mean, you're laughing, but you're not a girl.
Okay.
You sure?
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. Does this make sense? So if that's your choice, that you just want to be a common commodity, that any weirdo guy that has no qualities or character, and you wouldn't actually want to give your life to, can see what you look like and consider that that's you and deal with you that that's all you are, you know, then, hey, you know, I'm not going to complain. And neither are all the boys at the school. Hey, the boys think it's great, you know, it saves them money on magazines. You know, like that. Before, the boys had to go out and buy magazines if they wanted to see something. Nowadays, hey, you know, you get, you know, they don't got as good as stuff, you know, on magazines they got on the street. So you are doing a social, you know, welfare there. Like that. It is, it is. But is that what you want to be? Something just so common? You know what I'm saying? So the choice is yours. And to say that you're forced into that, I don't buy it. I really don't buy it. And they can have a hard time proving it, that you have to move with those particular people that have to do it, especially since probably a lot of them are Asians just like yourself, and they all have the same excuse and they're all doing the same thing. Like, I've seen it in Mayapur. Everyone's saying, well, you have to fit in. You're living in Mayapur. Everybody around wears a sari, and you're saying, oh, we got to fit in, you know, we got to wear our jeans and this and that. It's just nonsense. It's Maya. It's just an illusion. You know, because all your other friends are also just rebellious Asians that are just trying to, you know, how you say, flex their little, you know, how you say, teenage independent ego. You know what I'm saying? And so therefore they say you have to do that. Why I'm asking is that they handle it, because they got in a lot of trouble in Tawako. It's an Indian community. Because I made comments about the hair. I mean, to me, I couldn't care less how you wear your hair. But I just find it amusing when, if you look at the, you know, Anglo-Saxon girls walking down the street, probably a third of them have their hair tied. And probably the ones that don't have their hair tied, many of the times will tie their hair for various occasions. Right? They're washing dishes or taking a bath, they'll tie their hair. So many things. A formal occasion, they'll tie their hair. They go to a wedding, they tie their hair. But the Asian girls, as a principle, won't tie their hair because it's Indian. So they're actually more English than the English. I went to school. There was one devotee would go to, because, you know, they have this thing as now they're trying to reintroduce, like, religion into the schools, so they invite, you know, outside people. So she was, you know, invited from the Hindu community, this devotee. And so she went to two schools. One was an Indian school and one was an all-white school. The Indian school, if you went with Indian sweets, they couldn't eat that. They only eat chocolate. Right? And at the white school, they had an India Day where the teachers, kids, everybody dressed up in saris and did the whole thing, and they loved to take prasad and everything like that. These are Australians. You know, we're not talking about, you know, English. We're talking about Australians. you know, Aussies, Aukers, you know, like that. And so, therefore, I find it myself amusing at how the Indians themselves feel they're being so Western, right? There's a saying that was coined, the nouveau riche, right? It means people who just got some money and they love to show it and prove that they're rich. Well, the rich people don't show their money. So like that, you got the nouveau, you know, how you say, the nouveau honkies here, you know. I don't know what you call them over here. The whiteies, the crackers, you know. Like that, the nouveau crackers, you know, that we... You know, we don't do this. You know, crackers don't tie their hair. So therefore, we never, even if it was an occasion where they do, right? Turn on the television, turn on the Academy Awards. Find me one woman with loose hair. Find a nice formal wedding. Find me one woman with loose hair. But if I go to an Indian wedding, guaranteed everyone will have loose hair. Even if normally they tie it, they won't tie it there because they have to, quote unquote, fit in. So my point is this, say what you like, but I don't buy it. Your parents don't like it, but I've been around. I don't buy it because I don't think you have a leg to stand on in explaining it. And I've been around, and we've seen. Does that make sense? So that's the point. You choose your friends. You know what I'm saying? So just take it what I mentioned there. The ones that won't bother you for dressing in a cultured way, they're the ones worth dressing for. And the ones that won't accept it, they're never worth dressing for because they're scum. Right? Anyone who will not respect another's individuality is not worth catering to. Such narrow-minded, you know, small-minded persons, why should you bother trying to please? Right? Why bother? Choice is yours. I mean, if all those scumbags are your friends, hey, what can I say? It's up to you. Okay. I have a question here. Give some insight into culture for boys as well as girls. It's the same thing. You just have to, you know, how you say. Basically, the difference between the girls and boys is just that kind of have to pull your pants up a little bit so they're not falling off. And your underwear is not showing. Right? Here, let's just ask a question here. How many girls here, raise your hands, are impressed by the guys that have their underwear hanging out, pants half falling off, look like slobs, you know, think they look cool. Are you guys paying attention? This is reality. In other words, what the boys think is cool is what the other boys think is cool. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the boys are dressing how the boys think is cool. That'll impress the girls. The girls are much less than impressed. Right? Why do you think girls like Krishna? He dresses nicely. Right? He looks good. You know what I'm saying? So looking nice, smelling nice, you know, being clean, is not a problem for girls. Right? They go to a lot of trouble to be clean, you know, dress nicely, not smell like that. And so if you're like that, they won't mind. In fact, they'd probably be happy. Look at it this way. Don't think, never think that, well, I'm doing okay with the girls. The point is like this. Girls are very practical in that if there's nothing else around, then whatever is out of what's bad, they're going to pick what's less rotten. It's not that it's what they want. Right? So just because some girls will talk to you or even hang out with you, doesn't mean it's actually what they want. right? That, keep in mind. The guys may think it's cool, but it doesn't mean the girls do think it's cool. Very, very important point. Like that. Did we say anything wrong? No. That makes sense? But they're quiet about it. Girls are pragmatists. They're very practical. They deal with the moment, what's available, that's what they deal with. So, just because the girls are around or talking to it doesn't mean it's actually what they want. Yes.
How did Prabhupada inspire all his hippies in the early days to not only take to the religion, to take to the culture so intensely, from one extreme to the other extreme? Would he give classes on the importance of culture, or would they just want to be like him?
No, they just wanted to be like him. Like that. It's out of affection. Like that, they wanted to be. They were searching, they wanted to know, they were given answers, so they go for it. You know? Because he was fully committed, they were fully committed. He cared for them, so they reciprocated that. You have people who are actual revolutionaries who wanted to change things, not people who talk cheap. You know, but I'm saying all the credit goes to Prabhupada. But the environment was is the hippies actually did want to find something different, and they were willing to change, because the point is what everybody wears now is basically not a whole lot different than all the different levels of culture, but what the hippies wore was absolutely totally different. You know? And these were kids from rich families, educated families. These weren't, you know, slums dwellers. These were kids. That, but they just saw that the contemporary culture had nothing to offer. Very shallow. Right? You know, it's like, it's all based on money, all based on the body. So they got tired of that. They wanted something real, something answers. And nowadays the youth is quite comfortable with get money, spend it on your body. So I guess less revolutionary. Though they like to talk revolution and talk tough, but when push comes to shove, just another face in the crowd.
And another point is, culture is not just dress, it's also to do with kind of the, is culture also including the rituals aspect? Because then we also dog, the kind of, you know, don't do too much rituals, just try to know Krishna.
Yeah, no, it's ritual, dress, these things are separate. It's just like this. The Vedic dress is the dress of a gentleman, right? A gentleman wears a dhoti, chadar, like that. So that's cultured. Then if you want to translate that into, I have to function in the modern environment and they're not going to accept by it if I walk into my dhoti and chadar, then the principle of culture remains. Therefore, I dress like an up-to-date gentleman. You know what I'm saying? So if you really wanted to fit in, I'd be looking around at a lot of people, you know, either in suits or dress casuals. But I'm not. I'm looking at scum off the street. That's what I'm looking at in culture. So that means who's setting your culture is, you know, intoxicated, meat-eating, completely crazy, have no idea of how to behave, men that wouldn't have any idea how to deal with a woman or what a woman is. Women that completely bewildered wouldn't know how to behave to attract a man that actually knew what a woman was. And that's the lifestyle you've chosen. So culture is, what is your philosophy of life? And then the culture is living that. It's not your dress. Right? Dress is a symptom of your philosophy, of your culture. Like that. Does that make sense? So therefore, it's not that one has to be wearing dhotis or this or that. That's not the point. Right? The point is to be cultured, to be refined. You know what I'm saying? A girl can be feminine. She doesn't have to be sexual. Right? I mean, nowadays, people are so gross that if they can't see her chest, they actually don't know it's a girl. Right? If they can't see cleavage, they're not convinced it's a girl. Well, before, just by the airs of the girl, how she'd carry herself, you know, I mean, there are certain anatomical curves that the boys don't have. You could tell they're feminine. And that was enough. Because the whole point was the interaction between the masculine nature and the feminine nature. But now the boys are so gross and so insensitive that the girls have to go to such extreme to completely expose themselves, otherwise they don't get any attention at all. You know? The reason the girls dress like they dress is because the boys have become so uncultured, lack sense control, and are insensitive. The boys were sensitive, sense controlled, that they wouldn't have to dress like this. So actually, if you want to know the real fault why the girls dress like they wear, is because you guys deal and dress how you do. Right? So it's a culture. You have culture. It's responded by culture. Does that make sense? So that's the point. The girls just follow the boys. Right? Because the point is, this girl has to be noted, noticed. She has to be valued. She has to be important to somebody. So if that means that all it is that I'm a big chest and that's all that's important, it's better than nothing. But it's in no way what they actually want to be. Right? So the point is the sooner you guys get it together, then the girls will be much more comfortable to get it together. Otherwise, they can get it together, and then they're going to have to look somewhere else other than this crowd. Does that make sense? So culture is not the ritual, culture is not the dress. That's a manifestation of it. Right? Boy gives a gift to the girl. The gift isn't the point. The affection is expressed through the gift, right? So the dress and the lifestyle, that's an expression of the attitude. It isn't the attitude. Does that make sense? That's why you can express it through things that aren't necessarily, you know, traditionally Indian, if you need to. You can go to work dressed how they would expect you to, but in a cultured way. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Some other questions? Yes.
Maharaj, to give examples of culture, we often use Vedic history as an example of exalted personalities. But often we get the argument that it's not possible to be like that today.
It's not possible to be like that today.
Like, for example, if we give the example of Sita Devi or Draupadi, then individuals will say, but it's not possible.
So it's not possible. So what What do girls have today that Draupadi didn't have?
They say society is not as, if you act in that manner, it's not, like if you're going to work, you have to speak to people who are of the opposite sex. But yeah. Draupadi didn't have to do that.
Yes, because she had a husband to take care of her, yes.
Okay. So would you say
So then say that men today don't know how to take care of women. They force them into the workplace because they're greedy and they want more money. Say that. Don't say that you can't do it. The point is you can't complain because that's the guy you chose.
So if there's any argument they give about why Vedic...
But what's Vedic? The point is, okay, so you're at the workplace and you have to talk to the guys. How you talk to the guys, that's what makes Draupadi. Not that she doesn't talk to guys. You understand? In the Vedic society, a girl would be at the house, the husband goes out traveling or something, he has to make arrangements for her so she can live properly. If somehow or another he can't, or he's out longer than it is, she runs out of money, then she can go out and do some simple work. How she behaves, that's what makes her Vedic. So are you chatting up the guys at work? You know, they live in the next cubicle, you don't have to talk to them. You know, you go down to get a drink of water, you just get your drink of water. But you chat and talk and, you know, move this way and that way and stuff like that. Do they have to do that? Your boss won't let you keep the job unless you do that with the other guys. Right? It says that. When you join the company, it says, make sure that you flirt with the other guys in the company, otherwise you're out. Right? Does that make sense? If you have to bend over to tie the lace on your shoes so they can see your cleavage. Mm-hmm. You have to do that, right? Otherwise you lose your job, right? So that's what makes Draupadi. Not that she's not talking to guys, it's how she's going to talk to guys that she has to talk to. That can always be done. The nature of women 5,000 years ago and the nature today has not changed one bit. The needs of a woman then, the needs now, have not changed. Nothing's changed. Right. What's changed is the confidence that I can behave properly as a woman and I will be accepted in society. That's what's changed. Simply the confidence that I can be myself and be fine. Right? Girl thinks, I have to do all this, otherwise I'm not going to be accepted. Because she's not being accepted because no one notices, no one's trained, no one knows how to behave. So at least this, you get some attention. I walk down the street with the double bounce and the hips going. Everybody on the street will notice me. So that means I got noticed by, you know, 257 guys today. You know, I was noticed this much. At the end of the day, I can add all that up, and it might equal a little bit of a notice of some one person who actually cared for me. But I don't have that guy. So therefore, okay, 257. Does that make sense? So the point is nothing's changed between then and now. Absolutely nothing. Like that. We make it that it's changed. We make that excuse. But the point is, if somebody just behaves properly, it works out in the end. Because the point is to say, well, you know, the girl who's behaving properly, you know, she doesn't have any guy. But the girl who's not behaving properly, actually she can say she's got a guy. Lasted one night, lasted three nights, lasted 6 months. You call that a guy? So the one girl waited until she found someone she married and lived with the rest of her life. The other girl went through 10, 20, 30, 50 guys. Right? But by that time, is she ever going to trust a man? So even if she does find the right guy, will she actually know who he is? Will she be able to live with that? Right? She's been dumped by another 50 guys, or she's dumped them. So is she going to trust that this guy really is there? But the girl who waited can. So that's the whole point. You know what I'm saying? So that's the choice. But to say that it's changed, what's changed? Right? Nothing's changed. Is that okay? Okay. Anything else? Yes.
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. You've experienced culture in the 70s and up till now. You've also experienced Vedic culture. How do you see the way culture in modern society is going? And how do you think Vedic culture can help it?
I'll quote something that when Mahatma Gandhi visited in London, then when he went back to India, somebody asked him, what do you think of, you know, Western culture? And he said, that would be a good idea. You know what I'm saying? It just changes around various species, you know. You know, that hair stands up straight and they got a pin in their nose. If you check it out, you go to the zoo, birds look like that. You know, so they go from, you know, the big beast look to the, you know, they got the, how you say it, the lion haircut, you know, like that. They just go from one variety of animal species to another. You know, sometimes more sophisticated, sometimes less, like that. You know, you look at some of these things and you look at bugs and they're pretty similar. You know, all the different colors, all the funny shapes and everything like that, and, you know, funny diamonds and checks. You look at bugs, they're exactly like that. So it just goes through these things. What was big in the 40s went out of fashion and now is back in again. It's just they changed the color of it or changed the kind of cloth. There's nothing new. Right? It's the same. You still got two legs. Have they made a pair of pants with three legs on it? Right? So, it's nothing new. So the point is Vedic culture is a commitment to living a particular philosophy. That's Vedic culture. It's based on principles. And those principles can be applied time, place, and circumstance. Right? Therefore, you can always follow it. But you follow it according to what needs to be there. Does that make some sense?
Yeah. How do you think Vedic culture can help culture that we're living in now?
Point is, it gives a direction, it gives a foundation. Because nowadays people are doing and changing because they don't actually know who they are, where they'll find happiness. So they're trying different things, trying to become happy. But it doesn't actually give them anything. So the Vedic culture is how do relationships actually work. Right? Does that make sense? That's the whole point. How do relationships work actually? What's the science of them? That's Vedic culture. How does a man think? How does a woman think? Right? How can they actually be combined? Because the mentalities are different. Right? So understanding that, then you understand how to act. You know? Just like we discussed before. Most of the boys here, in the way they dress, probably think they're cool. But we asked any of the girls to raise their hand if they thought it was cool, and none of them raised their hand. So that means you got a room full of slobs here that the girls are kind of wishing would get it together. Right? So Vedic culture teaches one to be aware of that. Otherwise the guy is just so much into himself. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what the culture does. It teaches you who you are. You know, if you're a child, who you are. What is a parent? You're a student, then what's a student? What's a teacher? Right? You're a citizen, so what's a citizen and what's, you know, the leaders of the country? You know how to behave, it works. Like if you're at a job, you do your job well, and you're considerate and you really want to know how to do it better for the company, you don't think you'll move up? Right? Of course, it may not be cool amongst your other loser friends. So therefore, you punk out and do all kinds of stupid stuff. But you're at a job to make money, not to prove that you're a punk. Right? You know what I'm saying? So, does that make sense? So Vedic culture teaches you how to behave in any situation. What is the who are you, and what is the and who is someone else, and what's the correct way of interacting with them? That's Vedic culture. It's not. Means this dress, we wear it because this is what Krishna likes to wear, right? He's God, he could wear anything, right? He wears a dhoti, right? Radharani could wear anything, right? She wears a sari. So it must not be bad, right? If God and his consort, they wear these things. So that's why we wear them. Right? Why do you wear what you're wearing here? Because there's somebody who you thought it looked good on. You didn't just dream it up yourself. You walked down the street and saw, oh, those look cool, or that looks nice, or something in the window, or something in a magazine, and you put it together. But you took it from someone else. You didn't dream this up yourself. Right? So therefore, since you're going to follow someone else, what's wrong with following God? You can't get better than that. But if you need, because of the particular social situations you're in, you do need to dress differently, but still keep the same mentality. Right? Something that looks good, right, but is cultured. You know, of course it may cost money, but it doesn't go out of fashion. If you invested the money that you put into the trash clothes you wear, and you went down to some of these big shops and bought some good stuff, you know, the same amount of money would buy you something good. Of course, you'd have less of it, but it would last longer. You know?
Yeah. We often hear how it's predicted that Krishna consciousness is spread all over the world. And you've also kind of highlighted how society generally tends to follow people who set trends. How do we put the two statements together? How can we play a role in bringing that whole change about? It seems to be from the top down.
Yeah, how to bring about a change means, and how to take part in that. We have to be convinced. Because if we're not convinced, it's like you're either leading or following. There's not something in between. If it's in between, they don't take part in this at all. Right? They go to the forest. Right? But if you're leading, then you're convinced of it. Right? That's the whole point. You're convinced, you follow it, because you're convinced other people, that's what they want. They want to have something. They want to be committed to something. They're trying. Right? Why does somebody get a tattoo? Right? Because that means I'm committing myself to something for basically the rest of my life. That's something serious. So it evokes a very deep emotional feeling within them. Right? But they have to get a tattoo or get a piercing, you know, instead of have a nice relationship. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is we're trying to, if you're committed to it, everybody else will start to follow. Right? But the problem is everyone's afraid to be the first one. I don't want to be the idiot. So that means you're a follower. The person who doesn't mind being the idiot, that's the leader. Right? And with time, what everybody says is stupid, then everybody else is following. Right? In other words, if you're committed to it, then you're going to attract other people who are committed to it. And like his question, Prabhupada's committed to it, therefore he attracted people that committed themselves. So if you're committed to it, then you'll attract others. And slowly, slowly with time, that'll grow. Yeah? Okay, so now it's pumpkin time. Right. That's time for the next one. So.
That's great.
Yeah, thank you. So we beg forgiveness if we said stepped on anyone's toes. We were not trying to disturb anyone. We were simply trying to create, thought waves. You know, like you have a machine and it just goes. We're trying to get some blips. In it. Okay. Because technically, they say you're dead when you're brain dead. Like that. You know, the body can be dead. The heart stops, but if the brain works, then they'll say you're alive. So, no? Okay. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.
So, a heartfelt thanks to His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Purnaswami for an amazing and very deep and actually thought-provoking class, which I'm sure did raise many questions, but if some of you were sort of too shy or too embarrassed to ask, then you can email us, or you can email Maharaj as well, if that's possible. You can write us. We can...
Try carrier pigeon.
Maharaj said carrier pigeon might work. So if there are any questions that you still do have that you wish to ask, you can write it down and we can pass it on and hopefully get your question answered. So thank you very much for sitting, listening so attentively and asking the questions that you did do. So now we'll move on to the second part of our program, which is where we dance and...
chant, dance and take prasad.
Yeah, that's the one. So we're now chanting.
The better part of the program.
So we dance a bit crazily, but we do it because we want to do it, not because what everyone thinks that we want to do.
you do realize that half of London's outside the window of the city, so one way, that's actually paintings there. And they're watching everything that you do. So.
It's like when you're walking down, you know, I don't know if you've seen it in the city, you're walking down the street and you see a couple in a bed, or the couple in their living room, and they can't see out, but you can see in, and it's like, okay. It's like the TV, that this channel, we have this channel called Big Brother, or this program called Big Brother, where you're just watching people live a life locked in a house, and it's really, what's the point? So it's much like that, but for us, we're...
Open mouth, and move foot.
That's simple. What Maharaj just said is, we open our mouth, we sing Hare Krishna, and we move our feet to dance to nice music. So we'll now move on to that part of the program. Thank you.